Network production.
On the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Media Day, SEC preseason team, simulations, and whatever else in hour number one.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio and happy to be inside. Spent all morning outside, again, continuing the lovely moving process, and maybe I just need to do that for like two more weeks and I'll just sweat out everything. I'll lose the weight that I've been trying to and just good to go from there, because it is absolutely miserably hot outside here in the Auburn Opelika area. What do we got here on the... We got 94 on the unnamed weather app. Feels like 97, 98 right now. So very, very fun to have to hop in a U-Haul and have to sit in 110 degree heat to try and work a way out. But we got it done this morning. We got the most, the bulk of it done. So now we just get to go through the where does everything go process. And you never truly realize, here on Sports Talk Radio, talking moving, you never truly realize how much stuff you have.
I know.
Until you start to move out.
We told you that. We told you this weekend that this was going to happen.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were right.
It's like, yeah, we can take this in two or three trips. Then all of a sudden you fill up the car, you fill up the U-Haul, and you're sitting there looking back, and it's like, oh, no, the dining table is still there. We still have chairs. We still have this. We still have this. We're getting through it, though. We're getting through it. Happy to have a little bit of a break here this afternoon. Sit inside. Felt very nice. We walked into the studio, and I think I sat here in silence for like 20 minutes before it was like, all right, I'm good. What do we want to talk about here this afternoon? And that is going to be a lot of what hour number one is going to feel like here this afternoon. We appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader this afternoon. I'm Christian Griffin. Across from me, you've already heard him a little bit. My man Trip Upton here with me, as he always is. My man, happy Tuesday. A lot to dive into here this afternoon. Some fun stories as well as some things that we've been needing to hit on. So excited to have a full breakdown into college football and Auburn football here in hour number one.
Yeah, happy Tuesday. We're going to be going from preseason polls to player rankings to EA College Football 27 simulations done by the worldwide leader. Look at some win total projections. We're going to be bouncing all around. It's a true like free for all Tuesday.
And feels like we could say that just about every single day of the summer, except for SEC media days and segments here and there. But
yeah,
we're almost there.
But if you want to be a part of the conversation, again, phone lines are going to be wide open today. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Then the text box is always wide open 24/7 at 678. Nope, that's
the Trip Upton hotline.
That is the Trip Upton hotline. You don't need to know that one at 334.
You can call that one later.
Yeah, 334-784-1685 for a good time.
You want to know how football season is really fast approaching? SEC Media Days was obviously the number one of like, okay, wow, football season is officially here. I was unfortunately not able to attend here this morning, but again, First Baptist Opelika hosts the location for iHeart and Fox Sports for all of the high school media days.
So back.
And Lee Scott's was this morning. And so
I think Auburn's is either today or tomorrow.
Yeah, so being able to, I'm pulling it up right now to make sure I get all of the all the names correctly. Yeah, I see Cookie, I see Brooks, I see Coach Oz, I see Preston, and I see Braxton. So those four gentlemen able to represent Lee Scott's here this morning, this afternoon, talking with, again, Fox Sports, iHeartRadio, kind of representing what they're expecting to see from Lee Scott Academy here this season. And we are continuing to finalize everything in terms of Lee Scott, everything in terms of Auburn High, weekly interviews, everything, not only from our legitimate high school coverage on our respective and individual sports networks, but also here on the line to be able to get Coach Keith Etheridge and as well as Coach Jacob Osmond here weekly to be able to dive into their programs, dive into their teams, and then once you get into the season, dive into a little bit of a recap from what happened the previous Friday, or for you, once Thursday, and then dive a look ahead into what they expect to see, what they need to see from their team here in the next couple of days. And so excited to be able to continue finalizing that here before we work our way into August, before there's, I guess, the last week or two of downtime before the 21st, man, is going to be here before we know it. We are very, very excited for the high school season. And then again, that feels like that's the start of college football season as well. But at SEC Media Days, we talked a lot yesterday about kind of the overall projected placements of finishings and the projected SEC champion and how Georgia was the overwhelming favorite to win the SEC, most likely, again, according to the votes that were received by the SEC media, to take down Texas. I believe you had it that way. I had it the exact opposite. I had Texas actually defeating Georgia in the SEC championship. Six votes for Ole Miss to win the whole thing, in terms of the SEC, not the whole thing. Texas A&M, five votes to be the SEC champion. Alabama, three. Oklahoma and LSU both with two. And somebody there from Big Blue Nation, a lot of faith in the Kentucky Wildcats and Will Stein. You know why? Because of him. Because of Will Stein, they can win because of him.
Because of him and Kenny Minchie and Lance Dahl and all of the
none
above.
Of those because of him.
Because of him, yes, of course.
He said it on
in all of his zero head coaching games of experience.
Yeah, again, but because of him.
Because of him.
Of him. Projected order of finishing, again, all voted by the SEC media. Georgia 1, Texas 2, Ole Miss 3, Texas A&M 4. You then have LSU, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Tennessee 5 through 8 to round out the top half of the Southeastern Conference. Florida, Missouri, South Carolina, and Auburn 9 through 12. Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Arkansas round out the predicted order of finish. But again, I do want to remind you that we talked a lot about it yesterday. Only 10 times since 1992, so in those 34 years, only 10 times has the media predicted the winner of the SEC championship game. Does not sound accurate whatsoever. Just doesn't feel right, but again, that shows you the depth of the Southeastern Conference. But we continue on down in this article that Mr. Dunlap was able to send us, and we have our own that we created, again, just in terms of the overall finishing. I guess we never officially gave ours, and so real quickly, I want to know your predicted order of finishing for your individual ballot and how different or how similar it may have been to the official one.
All right, so obviously I had Georgia-Texas in the championship game with the Dogs coming out on top. I had Oklahoma at three, and that is you upgrade the wide receiver room, you upgrade the running game. John Mateer is healthy and a Brent Venables defense with a manageable schedule. I think Oklahoma should solely be in college football playoff talks. I thought seven was disrespectful for them personally. I have Texas A&M at four.
Okay, that's funny, but just getting you there. So our top four is the exact same.
You just flipped both teams.
I did. I have Texas and Georgia, one and two, and then I have A&M, Oklahoma, three and four.
That's fine.
So your 1-2-3-4 looks like my 2-1-4-3. But
yes. And then I had Alabama five. Did you?
Okay.
I had LSU six.
I have LSU, then Alabama. So.
All right, there we go. And so I think
so our top six is still the top six, just not
based on. Did you have Ole Miss 7 or did you have Ole Miss 8?
I had Ole Miss at 7.
I had Ole Miss at 7. Again, great minds think alike, guys. Okay? This is where we're going to differ. I want you to give your number 8 first.
I have the local boys.
You have Auburn?
I do.
I also have Auburn.
I have Auburn at 8. I have Florida at 9 and Tennessee at 10.
I have Florida at 9 as well, but I have Mississippi State at 10.
Ooh.
Because, again, I'm so high in Kamario Taylor, Fluff Bothwell. I think year 3 Jeff Lebby can put it all together with a manageable schedule. I think, I mean, this is like a 6-6.
Sure.
This is the kind of the area you're at. I have Tennessee at 11. I think that they could barely sneak into a bowl game. I think that they're going to lose some games early, trying to decide who their quarterback is, and then bounce back at the end of the season.
So our top 9 are not identical 1-9, but there are no teams that you have listed that I do not have listed.
Yes, correct.
That's wild. So 10th. 10th is the first time where I have Tennessee and you have State.
I have State, yes. Because, again, I've been high on this team. I have Tennessee at 11. Who do you have at 11?
I have Missouri.
I have Missouri at 12.
Okay.
I think a little bit of a hot take here. Missouri schedule, it's not the Missouri schedule of old. I think that we could be looking at a Missouri team that could be missing out on a bowl game.
Wow.
I think there's a path where that happens. If they struggle and they're out of conference, there's a world. I have Vanderbilt at 13.
I have Vanderbilt at 12. So, yeah. Now we're at the point of our 12 through 16 is going to look relatively similar, just mix and matching. Yeah. Yeah. So my 12 through 16, Vandy at 12, Kentucky at 13th, South Carolina at 14th. Bye-bye, Beamer, which does hurt to kind of say, yeah, just because I'm a fan. Mississippi State at 15th, despite me being about as high as you are on Kamario Taylor, the rest of the team, I have major question marks. And then Arkansas at 16th.
I have Arkansas at 16. I have Kentucky, I believe. No, I have South Carolina at 15. Yes, same thing. Bye-bye, Beamer. Since we've talked about Mississippi State, let me pull up their football schedule. All right. So I'm going to just rapid fire, kind of same thing we did with South Carolina yesterday. I want you to tell me win or loss. Ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah. UL Monroe.
Yeah, win.
Minnesota.
Yeah, give me a win for there.
South Carolina.
Home or away?
It's in Columbia.
No, that's a loss.
Missouri at home.
Loss.
Alabama at home.
Loss.
At LSU.
Loss.
Oklahoma at home.
Loss.
At Texas.
Win. No, I'm just kidding. Loss.
Vanderbilt at home.
I'll give you one. Yeah.
Auburn at home.
Loss.
Tennessee Tech.
Win.
Ole Miss on the road.
Loss.
So you have four. I would say, honestly,
which is why, yeah, I have them 15th in my SEC.
I think that they could beat Missouri to get to 5, and then I think they could win one of, I hate to say Auburn, but I'm so worried about that game. What happens if they beat Auburn? What happens if they beat South Carolina on the road? If it falls off the wagon early for the Gamecocks, I think Mississippi State will be like 6-6. I just don't know how they get there. I think they win. I think they start 2-0, and if they could get momentum into South Carolina 3-0.
Are there any of those game times that are confirmed?
Mississippi State is a South Carolina is a 3:15 p.m. kickoff.
That changes things a little bit. If it was a night game,
and on the road in Minnesota is at 2:30. It's the I think it's the CBS kickoff.
Yeah, I'm not.
But like, there's Minnesota.
Yeah.
But like, there's a world, in my opinion, where they host Alabama 4-0.
Could you imagine?
Oh my good. People would be like
that's the classic South Carolina of, oh my gosh, they're 4-0.
Here comes Georgia.
They're the 23rd ranked team in the country, and then all of a sudden you look at it, it's like, oh, why'd they lose 56-10?
Yeah. That's a tough middle stretch with Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, and Texas.
Yeah.
But like, if they could start 4-0, end like 3-1, 2-2, that's 6-6. And if everything else from there is gravy.
I'll shake your hand when I see more than four wins. Again, I'm very high on Kamario Taylor, but individually.
Fair. I understand.
But I was very high on Lenore Sellers last year as well, which I think many people are expecting a bounce back, but that offensive line scares the crap out of me, considering we looked at statistics and saw that it was
worse than Auburn's.
A sack worse than Auburn's was last year. Ooh, that hurts to think about. But no, that's funny that we have very, very similar SEC.
Great minds think alike.
I mean, that's why you tune in.
Yeah,
why
you have to.
It's why you listen. It's why you get the expert insider, because that's why you listen to the expert insiders of when we make our phone calls and talk to the experts. Otherwise, it's not us. The SEC 2026 preseason media days, all SEC teams. Say that five times fast. That is an incredible title to give all of these guys. One more time. The 2026 preseason media days, all SEC team. That's a lot of words. Offense. Trinidad Chambliss for Ole Miss wins first team. You have Arch Manning, quarterback, winning second team. I think that's a little bit surprising.
Too high or too low?
I would expect, just from the overall media buzz, I would expect him to be the first team.
Yeah.
Kind of the quarterback leader.
He was my one.
Yeah. And then Gunnar Stockton as a third team, which is also a bit surprising. Not because I'm not high on what Gunnar Stockton is, but it's more of the fact, and I don't mean this and as a degrading remark whatsoever, because I don't think that he's just a game manager. But the offense at Georgia always feels so fluid through the running game that he's not always called upon to do that much. And I understand that there are certain games, like him in Knoxville last year, where he had to light it up and he had to make arguably the best throw of the season on fourth down to the end zone, or decided to take it to the end zone. But game in and game out, I don't think Georgia wants to have to rely on Gunnar Stockton.
I think that I think this is an example of, you're projecting that this guy is going to be the quarterback on the best team in the SEC. And
rather than an individual talent.
Sure, and if you voted that way, I understand that, because quarterback, I think, is the one position you can kind of vote that way.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense to me. But when you look at Arch Manning, when you think about Texas, everything's going to run through Arch Manning. When you think about Ole Miss, if it's not Kawan Lacy, who we'll get to in about 4 seconds, it's Trinidad Chambliss. Kawan Lacy is the first team offensive running back, as well as Ahmad Hardy. And from what we heard at Media Days, again, this is somebody who is suffering and recovering from, a gunshot wound. And it was a lot of, okay, if Ahmad Hardy is not able to return, or if he's not able to play the first half of the season, and I didn't think that it was, not putting something like that situation lightly, but I didn't realize it was as extreme as it is, to where I thought he was just going to be 100%. He was going to be back to normal once September hit. But again, I think that running back room for Missouri is very solid, but interesting that Ahmad Hardy, based off of everything, and I guess that's not fair to judge it because you're looking at last year and what you could expect from this year, but Kawan Lacy, Ahmad Hardy, the two running backs for first team, I don't really have, again, a major issue with that. You look at Jaden Ball and Nate Frazier for Georgia. Sorry.
No, you're good. I said hand up.
Oh.
Proud of, or not
I thought
proud
that
of
was
this,
like, you
man enough
to
admit
you.
It. When I did our running back rankings, because it was like a drop-down menu, I did forget Kawan Lacy in the All-SEC running backs.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something you want to put a hand
I just
up
hand up. Hand, I'm taking accountability because I submitted it, and then I looked at it. I go, there's a name missing here. And then I went and looked back because we can't edit them after we send them. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, because he would have been my RB like one or two.
Yeah, my running back rankings were Kawan Lacy at one, Jaden Ball at two. I have Deshaun Bishop for Tennessee as my third ranked running back in the SEC. Relique Brown, Ahmad Hardy, and Jeremiah Cobb. Those six names up there. And it's not anywhere because of Jeremiah Cobb personally. It's more of the fact of he's going to get carries taken by other guys as well as Byron Brown as well.
Sure.
But I still think the numbers are going to back up everything that Jeremiah does in 2026. Again, the second team was Jaden Ball and Nate Frazier, and then third team was Deshaun Bishop and Hollywood Smothers, which, again, the NC State transfer. Does he go by the Alabama and NC State transfer?
I would say he – I mean,
did he step foot on –
He went to Dreamland Barbecue for a meal and then flipped to Texas effectively. Like,
he sent a picture of his Camaro and then flipped.
Yeah, sure. I got a question for you, Christian, though, about these running backs. If I was to tell you one of these running backs will not, if we fast forward to the end of the season, one of these running backs will not be in any of the
like, one of these six?
One of these six will not be on the all SEC teams. Which one is it and why?
Can I raise my hand and ask a follow-up question if they are all healthy? Because if my answer would be Ahmad Hardy.
Yes.
If the answer
assuming that they were all healthy.
Ooh. Funny enough, I feel like the third team running backs are almost more solidified than the second team running backs.
Really?
Jaden Ball, I think, could be taken out of that. Or Nate Frazier. Just because that running back room is always so solid. You saw a guy like Chauncey Bowens take a lot of carries, especially in the back half of the season. Frazier was having fumbling issues, and Kirby was like, yeah, we're not gonna deal with that. So you can go ride the pine. Next guy, you're up, and started getting carries to where I could see one of those two. By no means am I predicting it, but if you're asking the question, I would say one of those two from, weirdly enough, the second team rather than the third team.
I mean, I don't want to say the last running back available with Hollywood Smothers, given the fact that he's splitting a backfield with Relique Brown, who's also a talented back. I think that would probably be my answer. But I also agree with you about Nate Frazier. I haven't seen it yet with him. I mean, he's good, but I don't think that he's the Georgia bell cow back that they've had and really needed to get over the hump and win national championships. I think Jaden Ball solidified. I don't... I Kawan Lacy, it's going to be interesting to see kind of with a new play caller and new system what that looks like and if he's still going to get the same amount of carries. Because obviously if it's like, I'm going to go with my guy over you, that could – but I don't think he's going to be bad enough to fall out of the third team from RB1 to RB7.
Mm-mm.
So I'm going to go – the not very flashy pick. I'm going to go Hollywood Smothers because I think a guy like a Cedric Alexander or a Jeremiah Cobb who can become the running back in the backfield will beat out a two running back system.
Looking at the wide receivers, before we take a break, you have Cam Coleman at Texas, Ryan Coleman Williams at Alabama for the first team wide receivers. You have Tredez Green as the first team tight end, who I am very, very high on this year. You have Mario Craver and Isaiah Satania. Mix those, wow, those two up. Craver at A&M, Satania the third at Oklahoma. Not that Auburn fans remember that name whatsoever. Lawson Lucky, the second team tight end for Georgia. And then Ryan Wingo and Nick Harbor, the fastest man in college football for South Carolina. Wingo at Texas. And then Willie Rodriguez, the tight end for the Wildcats. The roundouts, I guess the skill position players. You have a couple of the all-purpose guys as well, but some Auburn fans, or Auburn players rather, did get their names mentioned. You have, yeah, we have a minute or two. Xavier Atkins, I don't think it's much of a surprise. Xavier Atkins,
first team all
linebacker. Leads all guys as that linebacker for the first team defense alongside Whit Weeks and Rasheem Biles. Weeks at LSU, Biles at Texas. You then scroll down to the third team. You have Champ Anthony as the third team. One of the defensive backs with a couple of, I guess only one other Alabama guy. It was the first team that had a couple of them. But Keon Sabb, Khalil Barnes, and Jelani McDonald for Alabama, Georgia, and Texas, respectfully. And then the third team place kicker of Alex McPherson, which is like, there's no way he's third team. You go look at Tate Sandell for Oklahoma, the lefty that everybody knows as Mr. Short Shorts, can kick it from the other side of the 40 if he really wanted to. And then Lucas Carnario, who you saw in the bowl season for Ole Miss, who powered home multiple 50-yard field goals. And so for Alex McPherson to be on that list, I think that's really cool as well. But three Auburn Tigers make preseason SEC Media Day. SEC preseason Media Day ballots for 2026, because that's how many words it felt like this entire title was given to us.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely a word bologna sandwich.
Very much so. Very much so. We'll take a break. Give us a call. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open all afternoon long. Anything you agree with, anything you disagree, a player that was possibly snubbed. But when we come back, a simulation of the 2026 season that by no means we wanted to talk about, and then we started reading it and started dying laughing about some of the scenarios that EA College Football 27 gave ESPN, and some of them are too funny not to mention. So we'll mention those when we come back, as we're just off and running here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. In 1803, President Thomas Jefferson faced an opportunity. France controlled a massive stretch of land west of the Mississippi River, called Louisiana. Jefferson wanted the port of New Orleans, but Napoleon had other plans. France needed money, so instead of just selling New Orleans, Napoleon offered the entire territory for $15 million. With one deal, the United States doubled in size, opening the door for expansion, settlement, and a nation stretching coast to coast. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here in the studio, and wrapped up the conversation about the, how many words was it again? The preseason SEC football media poll, all SEC team.
I think that there's a comma right there. I don't think you have to say the full thing. I think it's just the 2026 preseason media days all SEC team.
That's still a lot of words.
I mean, it's the same amount of words because it just changes from poll. SEC.
All right, my bad. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Sorry, whatever. No,
you're good.
I don't even care. It's fine. It's not a lot of words at all. And
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. But adding it for effect. But in the middle of dog days in the summer, perfect example of that, we were trying to figure out what we wanted to talk about, what we wanted a smaller segment to look like here this afternoon. And we found an article on ESPN simulating the college football season using EA College Football 27. Again, the new college football video game. That's what, now a month into existence. Maybe a little bit less with those that didn't buy any of the pre-orders or anything like that. And they've had their drama with all of the Road to Glory and Dynasty stuff, and not going to bore you with that side of things, but did find a couple of laughs in this article and a couple of eyebrow raises as well. So they did 26 simulations, one for every letter of the alphabet, and 42 different programs earned at least one college football playoff bid, including 35 teams from Power Four leagues. Miami led the way with 24, Ohio State 21, USC 19, BYU 16, and so on and so forth. The Auburn Tigers did not make the list. The Auburn Tigers did not see a college football playoff appearance. In fact, Auburn's name is only listed once on this entire article, and funny enough, it's under a little tab called Who Wins the Heisman Trophy? And again, of the 26 simulated seasons, 26 different players are going to win the trophy, but 12 of them were repeats. Ole Miss's Trinidad Chambliss won it 6 times. John Mateer won it 4 times. Byron Brown won it 3 times. Arch Manning, Sam Levitt, Jaden Maiava each won it twice.
That's pretty impressive.
So,
can I make a quick point that I found right here? The conference title scoreboard saying who won the conference a certain amount of times. The SEC, Oklahoma 6, Ole Miss 6, Tennessee 4, Texas A&M 4, South Carolina 3, Kentucky won it once. Somebody
may be right.
Someone might know the script. Missouri and Texas also won it once. Georgia did not win the
Georgia
SEC.
Georgia nor Alabama in these 26 simulations won the SEC.
That is... You know what? Good for the Wildcats.
Good for College Football 27 to basically put the media voters to say, you know what? We told you, you only get it, what, 10 of the 36 times or 34 times? You're not getting it right with Georgia this year. Music kicking us out of here. We're back to talk more college football right after this.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Into the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton here with you in the studio this afternoon. Appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us on this very hot Tuesday afternoon.
I beg your pardon.
Again, very, do I?
Nothing. I said I beg your pardon.
Oh, yes. No, I mean, moving is not fun.
It's not fun.
It's not fun whatsoever. Very happy to be taking a little break from that here before we get off the airwaves and I go
right back.
Thankfully, not really having to move any of the big stuff. Again, all of that was this afternoon, and we realized that the U-Haul didn't really get up to the front door or anything. So felt like we were running stadiums carrying, again, the dining room table on our back, which again wasn't overly enjoyable. But
did Gracie help a lot?
She did. Gracie was
good for her.
Very much the moral support, nipping at your ankles, yes, the entire time. But no, appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we found something earlier this afternoon from SEC Unfiltered, and it's Chris Phillips, who a lot of people know. We've had him on the show a couple of times. again, at SEC Media Days, I believe last year we were able to talk with him. But SEC Filtered, or Unfiltered rather, released their game-by-game predictions for the Auburn Tigers in 2026. And this will kind of perfectly begin to transition us into hour number two, because in hour number two, we're talking some of the win probabilities for Auburn football, because ESPN has now released those, and how if Auburn was to just simply win the games that ESPN has them projected to win and lose the games that they're not projected to win, it puts you not at a terrible spot. It puts you at a spot to where a lot of the people who throw their dollars around certain things, especially the overs, would be in a decent spot if they were to do that, according to ESPN. But we don't know what I'm talking about whatsoever on that side of things. And then we're also going to take a look at just the SEC win total projections as a whole. We'll kind of revisit that to see, post-media days, is there any teams that we're saying this is way too high, way too low? Kind of what we're doing with the Auburn Tigers, how we said, man, if there wasn't a public line, I'd be willing to say that Auburn's win total was 7.5 rather than 6.5. And so is that kind of the same thing for any other teams in the Southeastern Conference? But looking at the game-by-game predictions, and again, we will have our official ones a little bit closer to the football season. We'll have all of our official rankings here probably once I get back in town late next week into two Mondays from now. But he has Auburn going 7-5, 4-5 in the SEC. And yes, we want to be able to discuss this a little bit, but then this obviously led to multiple other bullet points that we want to be able to talk with you here today. And again, if you have thoughts on what we're discussing or anything else on your mind here in the sports world, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, which is always open at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. He has the Auburn Tigers starting 2-0, a win in Atlanta at home against Baylor, and then a win over Southern Miss. But he then has Auburn dropping the return game back to Jordan-Hare Stadium to Florida, so the first loss of the season, before bouncing back in Jordan-Hare Stadium with a win against Vanderbilt. So starting 3-1.
Sure.
Okay, I could think of worse ways to go about this. And then again, that month of October, which we have talked a little bit about, at Tennessee, at Georgia, LSU, he has three straight red L's, to where this Auburn team goes from 3-1 to then 3-4. And then in the most Auburn way imaginable, a win at Ole Miss, a win against Arkansas, a win at Mississippi State, a win against Samford. You rattle off 4 in a row after losing 3 in a row. All of a sudden, you're back of, okay, this Auburn team is 7-4 going to Tuscaloosa. Can they do what they have not done since 2010 in the comeback? Chris Phillips says no. Auburn goes 7-5, finishes 4-5 in the Southeastern Conference. This is, again, I say that as if we talked yesterday about, if you told me Auburn would win 7 games, I'd shake your hand right now. Like, that's the way that it is. And we'll dive in again to more of this here in just a moment. But when you look at this, 7-5, 4-5 in the conference, you lose to both of your rivals. They are both on the road. You lose probably a really tough game against Florida. You win a game that maybe you shouldn't against Ole Miss, but then you beat the other teams that you're supposed to beat. You beat Baylor, you beat Southern Miss, you beat Vanderbilt, and then you win those three that we've talked about all offseason long cannot be losses of Arkansas, at State, and Samford. Would you be okay with this?
I think I would be. You know, I think it would, losing to Florida would stink. Losing at Tennessee would stink, but then you get one back at Ole Miss that I think that a lot of Auburn fans would be, that would be the feather in Alex Golish's cap.
That's that seventh win that teeters Auburn going from 6 wins to 7 wins with the, okay, is this the game that you maybe shouldn't win? A lot of people consider that the Florida game right now, but he basically says if you drop the Florida game, you got to make it up somewhere else.
Right, and I don't think that, you know, I think it's a good example of Auburn holding par. It's Arkansas, Mississippi State, Samford, Southern Miss, Vanderbilt, and Baylor. I think that those are 6 expected wins, to be, or at least in the terms of you're probably the more talented team. You should win those games.
Sure. But.
But.
It hasn't happened. And so, 7-5, again, you'll take your quote-unquote complaints, and you can put them wherever you would like. Auburn hasn't won that many games since you could barely drive. And so,
correct.
Again, if that's the end-all be-all, I think that shows that the proof of concept is there, right? It's no longer the hope. It's no longer the, oh my gosh, especially, I'll even double down, especially if it's just a really tough game against Florida, but then if it's a shootout in Knoxville or it's a shootout at home against LSU, whatever that case may be, I think that makes it feel a little bit better than, okay, we lost 14 to 10. We lost 17 to 13, right? Obviously, you would expect the offense to put up more points, and if that's the case, again, that's a different type of complaint, as is differences in 7-5 seasons or 6-6 seasons or whatever the case may be. We talked a lot about, and I made it known, that I think the biggest jump that a college football program can make is going from 8 wins to 9 wins. I think that margin is huge. I think there's a lot of good 8-4 teams. The ability to get to 9-3 shows that not only did you beat the teams that you were supposed to beat, you probably won a game on the road that you weren't supposed to win, and you also took care of the really good teams that you played at home. I think that is that 9-3 mark that turns a program from good slash great into great slash this is that stepping stone that we want to get to. That being said, I think a very close target, because 1-5, I just don't really see it that big of a difference, unless it's like year one, but like, 3-9 to 4-8, I don't really see a big difference in that.
No, I think it would only be like you went 1-11 last year, and now you're 5-7. Like,
sure.
Then, yes.
But that's not, again, the one game jump.
Auburn's not going to go 1-11.
No, and even the 9 wins to 10 wins, that is a big step as well, but 10-2 to 11-1, I don't see it as, especially in today's college football, which is a crime that I'm now thinking that way, because again, 10-2 versus 11-1 a decade ago was the difference in you making a New Year's Six or possibly playing in a 14 college football playoff or whatever the case may be. But 10-2 to 11-1 and then 11-1 to 12-0, you're at the point now, if you get 10 wins in the regular season, you're in the college football playoff. And so,
right.
I don't hold those
depending on what conference you're in.
Sure. But I don't hold those with as much weight. But 8-9 is huge. But I think getting from 6 wins to 7 wins is also very big. But I also am at the boat that 7 wins can look very different in how the future can be built. And for Auburn, again, if I told you right now that Auburn was going to get 7 wins, you'd say, okay, cool. If I can't ask another question, I bet you a lot of people would take it. Credit to them, I think there's a lot of people now that would hesitate to take it just based off of media days, based off the expectation, based off the schedule, especially early, of, okay, is 8 wins possible? Is 9 wins possible? Not saying it is, but if you could guarantee me 7 wins to get you that floor with Alex Golish, I think I would do it. But I think there are many different ways of going about it. If Auburn were to start 5-0 and finish 7-5, I think that's when all of a sudden you get the concerns of, oh gosh, what happened? Did we peak too early? And I hate saying topics like that, but what if all of a sudden that was the case? Again, 7 wins just looks so different versus like what we're talking about here. This team started 3-4 and then went 4-1 in its last 5 games. You mentioned it. If this were to be the case, and you lost a close game in Tuscaloosa, but you finished 7-5, you're sitting there going, okay, but this team won 4 of its last 5. It found its rhythm in late October, going into November. It's playing its best football. Look at what was figured out. Now look at 2027, right? Versus the alternative of, say, you start 4-1, but you still finish 7-5. Then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we got to that 7 wins. But
you had a losing record to end the season. Yeah. I'd be curious looking at, if you were to give me this record, what the narratives would be coming out of this football season, looking at with DJ Durkin, you beat DJ Lagway. You beat whoever Southern Miss QB. You beat whoever Vanderbilt's QB is going to be. But then you rattle off wins against Kamario Taylor, Trinidad Chambliss, KJ Jackson. Those three quarterbacks are pretty solid. You lose to Gunner. You lose to Sam Levitt. You lose to Keelan Russell or Austin Mack, whoever the Florida starter is and whoever the Tennessee starter is. Would that, is that a DJ Durkin defense that would be confident at that point? Or that would that be one of us going, hey, maybe this needs to be addressed a little bit more than we think it does?
Yeah, very much. I mean, again,
not saying that they would fire him after this.
No, not at all. No. But again, 7-5 looks different with how the wins come, when the wins come, but then also from the Auburn perspective of, I would be okay with a schedule like this, like I mentioned, if you go and you lose a shootout at Tennessee. You lose a game at Georgia where, again, the offense looks competent. You lose a shootout against LSU, and it's like, man, that three-game skid, you looked like a very solid football team. You just got beat. Rather than if the offense could have done one more thing right, they win the football game. The defense did more than what they needed to do. They stopped Sam Levitt. They stopped Faison Brandon. But the offense just could not move the football. I think 7-5 looks very different on that side of things, too.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at this, it'd be different if it was like, hey, you're going to drop the Baylor game. You're going to beat Southern Miss. You're going to beat, like, if you were to kind of do an inverse, let's keep Georgia, let's keep Tennessee, and let's keep Alabama as losses for the sake of conversation. But then you go, okay, you lose to Baylor, we'll beat Southern Miss, you'll beat Florida, then you lose to Vanderbilt, you win at Tennessee, you drop Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, let's say, for like, and you like you flip one or two games. Like you flip a win against Florida for a loss at Vanderbilt. You flip a win at Tennessee or like for a loss at Ole Miss or a loss at Mississippi State. Would that change the conversation of the season? If you are kind of win loss instead of
the streakiness, the total streak of what this again is, where Auburn starts with wins of 3 or 4. Again, looking at SEC Unfiltered's game by game predictions for the Auburn Tigers in 2026, has Auburn going 7-5 with back to back wins to start the season. You then split Florida and Vanderbilt, the loss against Florida, the win against Vanderbilt. So you start 3-1. You then lose 3 straight at Tennessee, at Georgia. You win the bye week, and then you lose to LSU. So all of a sudden, you go from 3-1 to 3-4. The frustrations start building. The rumblings start building. Is Alex Golish the right guy?
When is he going to win the big one?
When is this going to work its way into fruition? And then all of a sudden, you figure it out against Ole Miss. You then rattle off a win against Arkansas. You then go on the road to State before coming back home to Samford and rattle off 4 more wins, and then you're 7-4, and then you fall to the Iron Bowl.
And even if it's if it was an Iron Bowl at home, I'd be a little bit more concerned about if you were to rattle off 4 then lose the Iron Bowl. It's on the road. I mean, you haven't done it since I was 7 years old. You know, like I was barely in grade school when the last time Alabama won at Auburn. Not to age and not to talk trash about Auburn. I'm just saying that's a fact. And
I'm going
to
quiz you real quick.
Okay.
What was the play that won the game for Auburn?
Wasn't it the Lutzen Kirkin touchdown on the corner? Like he like slips into the end zone and the Rob Ramblin's like,
I'll accept that.
Lutzen Kirkin!
I will accept the answer because that was, I guess, what officially won it points-wise. So, yes. Okay.
Yes.
Well done.
Thank you. But I think that, like, you win 4 in a row, and you lose maybe you lose a tough game in the Iron Bowl on the road. Sure. It's hard to win away from any stadium. It's easier to win at home than the road. Everyone knows that. If you're 4-0 in the month from Ole Miss, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Samford with that signature win at Ole Miss, I think, genuinely, Auburn is a top 25 team going into this season next year because people would have said Alex Golish has figured it out. The schedule will be different. He gets Tennessee and Alabama or Georgia and Alabama at home. This is the year. This is going to be, you know, yeah, he's bringing in a new quarterback, but it could be good. That could be legitimate conversation at the end of this season. If you were to snap your fingers and this was to happen.
Oh, looking at the 2010 Iron Bowl. Man, just got a text from our buddy. And that was, in fact, the correct, not that your answer was incorrect, but if we were family feuding it, your answer would have been number 2, maybe even number 3. Yes, the Tasharvin Bell sack on Mr. Greg McElroy was, in fact, the pickup throwdown was the answer that, at least in my head, or gosh, there's so many plays from that game. The fourth down throw that I still have no idea how Emery Blake held on to because he caught it with his fingertips and the Alabama DB swiped down on his forearms. Still no idea how he caught that football. That and the Mark Ingram run where the almost like the peanut punch from the backside, and it rolled all the way into the back of the end zone and for a touchback. And so, yes, there we go. Antonio Coleman, yeah, the punch where, again, he was beat at the line of scrimmage and ran all the way down the far sideline and punched the ball out for Mark Ingram, and somehow it stayed in bounds for 20 yards. Oh, what a moment.
What a moment.
I was 10 and can, for some reason, still vividly remember every single moment about that game. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will give you some Auburn football updates in terms of future scheduling to wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being a part of today's program and sitting here listening in on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. I do have a task for anybody that's listening that would like to get involved. I'll share that here in just a moment. But we do have some Auburn football news, not necessarily current news, but future scheduling news as the Auburn Tigers game against Missouri State has been pushed back from 2027 to 2034, rather, with Missouri State moving up to the FBS and the Conference USA, and then obviously the SEC going to a 9-game schedule. 2027 didn't work for either team, and so they decided to go ahead and can that and move it to 2034. So 2027, Middle Tennessee, Austin Peay, and Notre Dame at Notre Dame for the Tigers in 2027. And again, so do with that what you will. Unfortunate that I won't get to see Missouri State play next year.
Yeah, I'll have to wait till I'm 31 years old to watch that game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, you're old.
That I mean, I will be old. You, what are you? Yeah, 30, like 33?
I don't even want to think about it. No, I don't. I don't like that. Don't like that thought. Before the music kicks us out of here, we're sitting there talking about the comeback in 2010 and all of the specific moments that were some of the clutchest plays from that game. Send us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1685. Clutchest moments in an individual game that may not be not like the kick six, not the prayer at Jordan Hare. A play within the game that doesn't get talked about enough that is one of the clutchest moments that you have in Auburn history.
Oh, good one.
I will send one to send us to break to get us to hour number two. 2013. The wheel route on 3rd and 9 in Kyle Field at Texas A&M. In the sun, off the shoulder pad. Not sure how Nick Marshall ever threw the ball accurately, but I think that's a fantastic one. So shoot us a text. The clutchest individual game or individual moment that's not talked enough about. And we'll talk about that to get hour number two started. Hour number one of the books. We'll talk about that. Also, Auburn's win probability for each game in 2026, as well as the SEC win total projections. All of that coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Win probabilities, the over-under win totals in the SEC, and why not? A trip down memory lane with some great Auburn highlights.
Now, Live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. A very relaxed, conversational day here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. Talked a lot of college football here today. That's what's going to continue in hour number two, as well as including some unscripted stuff that we've continued to get texts about, which, again, we thank you for the support, the engagement, and, again, for taking us down memory lane that we will continue to go through here this afternoon. In hour number one, we talked about the player, or I guess the media votings for the preseason all-media day SEC teams, and how went through the first team, the second team, the third team, primarily the offensive guys and the skill positions, but also did highlight three of the Auburn players that were named in there as well. We talked about ESPN and EA College Football 27 simulating the 2026 season 26 different times, a letter for the alphabets, or one simulation per letter of the alphabet, so that way you could look at simulation A, simulation B, simulation C. And Auburn's name was only mentioned once, and it was the fact that in those 26 simulations, Byron Brown won the Heisman three times. So you're saying there's a chance, because they're not going to give a 6-6 football team a Heisman Trophy winner, I can tell you that much. You're saying there's a chance. Also, legitimate conversations about Lane Kiffin leaving LSU to go to the NFL, Marcus Freeman going to the NFL, Dabo Swinney going to coach at Bama, at Notre Dame, at Michigan, like all sorts of crazy things that happened after all 26 simulations in college football. So we're able to talk about that for a few moments, as well as kind of a conversation that followed looking at Auburn's game-by-game win projections from SEC Unfiltered. Now, it had Auburn going 7-5, starting 2-1, or starting 3. Got to pull it back up. Hold on. We'll get there in a moment. Starting 3-1. I forgot the win against Vanderbilt. Then losing 3 straight. Then winning 4 straight, and then losing at Alabama on the Iron Bowl to finish 7-5, 4-5 in Southeastern Conference play. And we talked about how, again, if you took 7 wins right now, you would take it. Yet that being said, that would be the most Auburn way to do it, and had multiple different bullet points bouncing off of that, of how 7 wins looks so different based off of if you get those wins early, if you get those wins late, what that could look like for Auburn's season and Auburn's schedule. Also, some non-conference changes for Auburn football moving forward in 2027, moving a game to 2034. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we're going to look at kind of the win projections for every SEC teams, as well as what ESPN probability says about Auburn and how they might be as another. The computers might be falling in love with the Auburn Tigers getting to a bowl game and some more. But first, we're going to look at kind of continue this conversation of just legendary clutch plays with Auburn. But if you want to join in on the conversation, phone lines are wide open. 334-321-1390. Give us a call, or the text box, which is always open, at 334-784-1685.
Yeah, and to end hour number one, I sent the text, or I asked for some texts, and very much received those to the personal line as well as to the on the line text box, which will have some changes in the coming days, which we are very excited to bring you.
Same number. Just go ahead and say that now.
But come the start of the new calendar, we're excited to bring you some news on that side of things. But we're talking about the comeback in 2010. And some of the clutchest moments, and how, again, Tasharvin Bell was on there, the fumble into the back of the end zone, highlights and clutch moments that are not necessarily talked about enough. Because when you look at that game, you think about Cam, you think about being down 840 points, coming back, and the throwback to Lutzy to go win the game, where he does the Lutzy in the corner of the end zone. That's the moment, that is the individual highlight if you think about the Iron Bowl, but a lot of underrated moments in that game as well. And so I asked our Auburn family to send in some of their favorite moments from games, whether those are wins, I guess they'd have to be wins if they were considered the clutchest moments. I guess they didn't have to be, but that would obviously more so lead to a joyous conversation of individual plays that are not talked about enough for Auburn wins. And have gotten a lot of those throughout throughout the break. Also another one from Lutzen Kirkin, where Auburn went into Columbia, South Carolina and caught the throwback and actually fumbled it. But I remember, yeah, picked it up and almost held it away from everybody. That's a really good one. Our buddy Jack Hutton texted in and said Duke Williams, the hitch and go in 2014 against Kansas State. Also the Booby Whitlow 3rd-and-7 draw. Jack, if you're still listening, is that 3rd-and-7 draw, that TD, is that where he ran over the Washington guy at the end zone, but he almost fell backwards and then just kind of fell over the goal line? I know that's a really, really good one. Got a text in the on-the-line text box. Again, continuing to get so many moments from Auburn wins that are not talked about enough. And it was the Stidham's 2 touchdowns in 5 minutes against Texas A&M. The last one being the Seth Williams game winner in the far corner of the end zone where he caught the back of the football. Still don't know how exactly he caught that. Some that came to my mind, Sean Shivers, not in the Iron Bowl. Sean Shivers in Baton Rouge, because everybody remembers the play that Bo Nix had where he scrambled right, scrambled left, went back right, went back left, went forwards, went backwards, and then found Mr. Fromm in the end zone, or I guess at the 5, and he ran into the end zone. But Sean Shivers caught 2 swing passes on 3rd down in that same drive. Jarquez Hunter also had a 30-yard run to get the Tigers across midfield. Also had the touchdown in that game where he got stood up, freshman Jarquez Hunter, and held the right arm over the goal line with the football for Auburn to score. And so, again, moments that you don't necessarily think about that are underrated, I guess you think about, but the national media doesn't necessarily think about. Again, text box is always open, 334-784-1685, as is the phone lines. And we go there now, 334-321-1390. Dwight from Montgomery, how you doing this afternoon, sir?
Let's go.
Man,
hey, here's the one thing, and I know this is off the table because the prayer Jordan Hare and the kick six,
sure,
those are just they are nothing. The thing of that people miss about the kick six is coach called a timeout and pulled the back guy out. I can't remember
yes.
who it was.
It was
back
not
there.
Chris Davis the first time. Yes, I talked about that with
Chris
Tripp on the
Davis.
Way to Tampa. Yes.
He put Chris Davis on the field intentionally.
Yeah.
And that ended up being the difference in that game. And I called it when, I mean, I was watching the game. I wasn't there in the stadium. And I said, you know, you can't return this.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw Chris Davis come out, I said, oh, bleep. You know, something
fill in
might
the blank, right?
Here. The one that really comes to mind is 1986 Alabama Auburn game, and Auburn had this play. They had a reverse that they ran, and it was never ever with Lawyer Tillman. It was always with Trey Gaines and Freddie Wagan.
Yeah,
and they run the reverse, and Lawyer Tillman is 5 foot from the sideline ref in Legion Field calling time out, saying, we don't have the right personnel on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And the ref looked straight at him and was like, nope, y'all run your play. And it was just like he didn't flick him a bird, but he flicked him a bird. He was like, okay, well, then I'll run it. And that's one of my favorite plays in Auburn history.
That was a 21-17 final, I believe, right? Can't say that I was alive for that moment, but I've seen
y'all,
it quite
y'all
a few
were,
times.
I mean, my moments were, I mean, 1993, Ace Atkins only came in on 3rd down and long. He was just a rushing back, ended up being on the cover of Sports Illustrated
mm-hmm.
for the undefeated Auburn Tigers. And when we beat Florida, and he did the fist pound in his hand, and they got a great picture of that. Let's see, what else? Frank Sanders in 94,
sure.
The catch in the back of the end zone, the 38-35 game in Gainesville, beating them. it's just, and then now I've got a lot of basketball memories.
Oh, yeah. Again, but, so many
and,
of those.
And here's the other one. It's 1984. We had gone up, and Alabama was – it was a fourth down play, and they were throwing the ball to Clay Whitehurst over the middle. And our friend of our program, Jake Crane, his daddy was playing middle linebacker, and he hit Clay Whitehurst. He hit him so hard that he would have been put in prison these days. Mm-hmm. His soul left his body. Is how hard Kurt Crane hit him, and that sealed the game, and we run off the field. So, but I can go on and on. But I'm 50. Y'all are in your 20s. Y'all just. Unfortunately, y'all don't have a lot of great memories.
Yeah.
Y'all didn't live through the 80s.
No, we did not live through the 80s. But we still got some solid moments in here. Just over the last handful of years, they're a little fewer and far between.
Hey, y'all have to get on YouTube to find memories.
We're gonna get on the Face Graham Insta book or whatever the grandparents.
Yeah,
call it
whatever
these days.
That is. The book of faces, whatever it is.
Clay, appreciate
all
you, brother.
Right, guys, but those are the ones that come to my mind. In 1994, Winston Person, we beat number 3 Arkansas. 8,000 of my favorite people were in the old Beard Eves, and mm-hmm. we rushed the court. It only got to half court is how many people went to all our basketball games back then.
Well, yeah. Well, once we get a little bit closer to basketball season, we'll have this conversation, and you just light up the phone lines, giving all the basketball memories as well.
All right, bud. All right. We'll talk to y'all later.
Yes,
y'all
sir. Appreciate you. Appreciate you, brother. Yeah, again, so many of these memories continuing to come to mind. And, again, this is why these days are so fun, because it's a day that – I mean, again, we're talking win totals. We're talking Auburn FPI or whatever the case may be of what SEC projects them to win. But, you have moments like this, and you talk about bringing connections to everybody that's tuned in. For some reason, one of the most useless pieces of information that I know is that Chris Davis was also the one that knocked T.J. Yeldon out of bounds with 0.1 seconds left. And then also had the kick six, but funny enough that Chris Davis was also the one that allowed Kelvin Benjamin to catch the slant in the end zone. But that's neither here nor there. We don't.
Yeah.
I don't remember any moments like that. Got another one. CJ Uzomah, 2013, Mississippi State. The Nick Marshall pump fake into the near corner of the end zone. A fantastic one. Got Sammy Coates, and there's a couple ones that come to mind for number 18, Sammy Coates, but this texter mentioned the 3rd and 9, just the home run ball in Oxford late at night. It was 35-31, and I remember that. I believe that was the score, but it was 3rd and 9. It felt like neither defense was going to get a stop, and the only reason that Auburn got a stop was because of a very painful play that I won't choose to highlight again. But the lob to Sammy Coates at midfield, just a touchdown ball, a home run ball, and he went up and caught it over the cornerback and I believe the safety as well to move the chains. And so, gosh, so many memories that come to mind. And I know you had a couple of these during the break as well.
Yeah. So mine is not for Auburn. The one that came to my mind, and you have to remember, frame of reference of Auburn, the past 4 years, really. Give me the Texas A&M Auburn game from 2024. It's the drive that they go down and Ian Van Cone is going to kick the field goal. Peyton Thorne on 4th and 3, the read option, just runs it for 23 yards, just pulls it and effectively gets Auburn into a range instead of we might have to like punt and get the ball back to go get the ball. That's a good one. Obviously the catch in the end zone by KLS. I think it was to send that game.
Gosh, we gotta build up your memory. The fact that those are the moments you think of that bring happiness.
we have nothing. For my Georgia Tech one, I have from the same game, the 2015 Georgia Tech FSU game. FSU is number 9 in the country coming into the game undefeated. Have not lost an ACC game in like 30 games. There's the play.
Just conference is bad.
Correct. It was the Justin Thomas 60-yard touchdown run to cut the lead to three. It was Tech's first touchdown
of
the night.
He played football at the time?
He did, yes. Wow. Not yes, the better Justin Thomas. and the call was like, Justin Thomas, just in time. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Sweet.
And then on the drive to tie the game, there was a fourth down, and they, you know, obviously it's a wishbone, so they roll out. Justin Thomas throws it up, and Brad Stewart is beating the DB and catches it and gets out of bounds to be able to set up the field goal that tied it. And then Florida State obviously got the ball back and tried to kick a field goal to win it. It's blocked. Lance Austin picks up the block kick, returns it down to the end zone for a touchdown. Phenomenal play. But I'm trying to think. I mean,
that's a good one.
The punch out in the Missouri game for the ball to go out of the end zone for a touchback to seal Auburn the game.
I don't even think that was a punch out. Didn't he just try to extend and the ball just didn't go with it?
That's my frame of reference.
I am by no means going to call that a clutch moment in Auburn history. The fact that dude extended over the pylon and the ball just didn't go with him in Auburn. God, what a game. The thicker kicker missed an extra point.
Harold Melvis. Then there's this was a loss, but the Peyton Thorne, like, 80-yard first down, like, you're backed up to your own goal line option, and just runs it up the sideline, and you end up still losing that game because Brock Bowers legitimately just said, hey, I'm going to go run a middle cross. Stop me. And Auburn's linebackers and safeties just refused to stop him.
I think Georgia converted 19 straight third downs on that drive, it felt like.
I'd believe you if you told me that.
That was
painful. There was the play in...
Somebody just said the goal line stand against Mississippi State. Auburn won at 41-34. Yeah, that was the shovel pass, wasn't it? Where the legs just got taken out and tried to extend the ball but didn't have time. That's a fantastic one. Speaking of Sammy Coates, gosh, I continue
There's the
to,
stiff arm.
To get the, these are fantastic, but... everybody obviously remembers the kick six, but the RPO to Sammy Coates that got Alabama the football back to tie it at 28. It's a fantastic one.
I'm trying to think of other decent ones. There was for Auburn, because we didn't win a lot. There's the ones that I remember are the ones that were called back. It's like the pick six that or the interception that got caught back against Cal, like at that 10 o'clock kickoff, and it was like, okay, it's a fumble, and they said it was Auburn's ball, and they ended up score that drive and win that game. That was again that tells you what I've been watching for the past 5 years.
Talking about the lawyer Tillman reverse, got a text and says from our friend Jeff in Enterprise, says he's a good friend with Jim Thompson, who was the offensive tackle on that lawyer Tillman reverse, said that it was mass confusion on the play, but it worked, and why not? It got him on a painting. He's number 54 in one of those paintings. And so, again, yeah, if you talk about all about the mass confusion, you could see the confusion. God, this is so fun. We need to have this just every single day.
Is
it brings
it,
back every single happy memory that –
Was there a play? Was it – I want to say – was it D Ford? It was either D Ford, Nick Fairley's, one of the two. I don't know. It was against Georgia. And they, like, sacked to win the game, effectively. I think it was Fairley, because they played. That's the one that they show.
Fairley was – that was A&M. That was sacking Johnny Manziel.
That's what I'm thinking.
After he scrambled, after Johnny Manziel had gone back to get freaking quarter zone shots, like, 18 times. But, yes, then danced on after the sack, got up and danced, and there was an unsportsmanlike penalty, but really nobody cared whatsoever. Yeah, Jack texted in again and said, yeah, the Carl Lawson stopping Yeldon in 2013 on 4th-and-1 to where Bama should have just, again, kicked, but they don't do that inside Jordan-Hare Stadium successfully. This is so fun. Holy
this is fun.
I know that this is not as, like, childhood for you, but...
I mean, again, my football
you're
watching
appreciating
career,
greatness.
I am appreciating greatness. But when you watched 3 yards up to the B-back, three pitch to the outside, and if you threw the ball, everyone in the arena stood up, and you're just like, oh, is they going to find... And then they would be an incomplete pass, or he would scramble for a first down. Like, that's what
Ooh.
The... There's also the...
Zach Etheridge, the scoop and score against Arkansas, which I think that's one of those moments that... You're thankful that there wasn't replay because I'm pretty – that wasn't McFadden, was it? It may have been, but there's no way he wasn't. No way he wasn't.
Georgia Tech also got a tip drill interception in that game in the end zone because they didn't run the ball with Dalvin Cook and somehow Tech jumped on to – and that was what led to them tying the game. Again, you got to remember this is my frame of reference, but no one wants to hear about ACC football.
Everybody remembers the, again, the Cam run, but the Ontario McCaleb was a 70-plus yarder to go and win it, 24-17 over LSU in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
See, a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of the time, these plays and I'm remembering were by the other team.
Oh, we gotta build back up your.
We'll be back. We'll be there. It's by this time next year, we're gonna be able to talk about the Byron Brown stiff arm against Alabama to seal the game in Tuscaloosa to get a late first down.
There you go.
That's what we'll be talking about.
Last one before we get to break in the SEC Championship, Auburn and South Carolina. The Hail Mary at halftime, they got tipped, and I can still picture it. Darvin Adams caught it right next to the referee, handed it to him, and slapped him on the butt. Play it during the break. Darvin Adams caught it flat-footed. Referee was right there, handed it to him, and smacked the referee on the butt. But he caught a touchdown. It was pretty cool as Cam was falling out of bounds. Oh, what a trip. What an awesome segment. Off the rails, but would not have wanted anything else here on this Tuesday. It's what we needed to keep the energy alive here for the final 37 minutes. We got to take a break. We're way past our 15-minute commercial breaks, but we'll take that break. We'll come back and go somewhere. It won't be as good as this past conversation, but we will continue on with the Tuesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, having a really fun time here in the studio. Again, hour number two. A little bit unscheduled. Again, we did not have this on the rundown, but we're talking. How did this start? Talking about 2010.
Because we said that imagine if Auburn won the Iron Bowl for the first time since 2010
since
on the road. And you
yeah.
asked me what was the clinching play. And I said the Lutzie Kirkin touchdown. And you
which
said.
Which is not incorrect.
Which is not the incorrect answer. But you said, actually, I would consider this. And then you're like, oh, we just got to talk about it.
Yeah.
So it
turned into naming.
It's
some
a good history lesson. It's
very much so. Lesson. Again, I'm going to sit you down one day and we're going to sit and watch all of these and engrave them into your memory. And that's what we are going to do. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open all afternoon long. And Terry, you're on the line here on this Tuesday afternoon.
Hey, Christian. Hey, Tripp. How y'all doing?
Doing well, sir. Right. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well. In the 2013 Iron Bowl, the past semi, because you talked about Christian.
Yeah.
I remember I was living in Talladega at the time, and the radio broadcast had went out, the Auburn broadcast had went out, and I went inside, I flipped it over to the Alabama broadcast real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I never will forget the belly aching, the crybaby in by Eli Gold, and I think Phil Savage at the time, that Andy Marshall was over the line of scrimmage. And I never heard such crybaby and belly aching in my life.
That and it not being true either.
No, no. And also, I remember at the end of the 2010 Iron Bowl, Eli Gold had made the comment during the game, Auburn has been known to come back. And they went, as the seconds ticked off, they won 28-27. Eli Gold said, well, I hate to be the one to say I told you so, but I told you so.
That's fantastic. How funny is it that sometime the best memories and the best calls come from the road or the team that you don't cheer from, but it just makes it that much sweeter, especially in moments like that.
Right.
That's,
take care, guys.
That's awesome. Thanks, Terry, for calling in. Yeah, that's incredible. Thinking, yeah, I hate to be the one to tell you I told you so, but we have number two on our field, and you don't.
Yes. So hopefully. Again, I know. I think, and it will come to have those moments back. I mean, it is just a when the number one thing I could think of was Peyton Thorne. So, you know, trigger warning. I would say cover your ears, but if you're driving, keep your hands on the wheel. But golly,
Tripp's clutchest moment in Auburn history was Jackson Arnold's quarterback keeper on 4th-and-3 in Waco, Texas, on Friday night.
See, you say that as if when I watched that play. That is probably a play that I remember from that season.
Oh, I mean, I vividly remember it, obviously. So it's just unfortunate that those are sometimes the memories that stand out. But again, as we have clearly showed, the engagement A is there, as is the overall joy of some of those moments that go a little bit underappreciated in some of the big-time Auburn games. We'll turn the page and look at 2026 when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And I didn't think that we would get 30 minutes from a simple thought that I had going to break in hour number one. But gosh, it's so fun being able to live those moments back. And I don't want to spend. I promise I'm not going to spend the rest of the hour on this, but. Somehow the shift during the commercial break went from let's get the clutchest moments to the not the worst moments, because they're still good Auburn moments, but I refuse to say that the Jeremy Johnson throw to Melvin Ray to go to overtime against Jacksonville State is going to be one of the clutchest moments that I talk about.
The TJ Finley touchdown.
That was on there, yep. The TJ Finley throw against Georgia State to Shedrick Jackson.
I said during the break, after Mercer drove right down the field and scored a touchdown, Deuce Knight, first play going, watch this, and going 75, 80 yards. I remember that one.
Yeah, I don't know how that shift happened, but somehow it did.
But
I'm going to go back and
this is
tonight's one of those nights.
You wish you had internet in your apartment now.
I do need to go.
So you can just pull up to my Airbnb that I'm staying in this week, if that tells you where we are.
Yes, yeah. I don't have internet. I haven't had internet in. When did Jacob leave? Jacob left.
Well, we were in Tampa. So you haven't had internet since you've been back from Tampa.
Oh, yeah. I guess it's not that bad. I'm shaking.
I need my little man.
I need Auburn football 2013 highlights to go to bed. But that's what I was going to say. It's like tonight's one of those nights of, I'm going to go back and watch Brad.
Just get you a bowl
watch
ice cream.
Everybody's calls from the amount of times that I have watched so many different full Auburn highlight videos, whether that's from a season or I just look up like, let's go back to 2017 Arkansas. Let me hear the stove is red hot to get the game, like just moments like that.
I have a buddy that, friend of the show, Matt from Fairhope. We would hang out in college and we'd go over to his, he'd stayed and lived in the fraternity house. And so we'd go over there for games and we'd walk in and without fail, there would be some kind of Auburn highlight reel playing on the TV. It was always something different. And I have to shout out to him for that.
2016, Eli Stove. This stove is red hot against Arkansas. Apologies.
Yeah. No, you're good. Like, I'd walk in and it'd be like just Cam Newton full season highlights. Mm-hmm. And then he would sit there with me and some of our other buddies and go, all right, we're just going to name athletes and go to highlight reels. And so that was always a fun part of college.
Okay, hold on. We are going to get back to our rundown. And I apologize if this is speaking for a little bit of the younger generation more than the older. There's only one correct answer, and I do not mean to set you up for failure, but there is only one correct answer, and I'm going to look you in the eyes when I ask you this question because there is only one right answer.
Oh, goodness.
The greatest college football highlight tape of all time.
Tavon Austin.
Thank you.
It is Tavon Austin. Gonna tell him, man. Yes.
Absolutely.
Why would I ever say anything
else? Just making sure that you know.
You want to,
for those that know,
sneaky
Tavon Austin, West Virginia highlights. Helen back in the background. You have young Gus Johnson.
I have watched that many a time.
Was it 100 big ones? Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Watching that on the bus to go play JV football. Fire me up, baby.
Oh, dude, yeah.
I
would watch so many highlight reels in class up until even in college. Like, I would be sitting there in class and I'd be watching Anthony Gordon Washington State highlights. I like the niche highlights, buddy. Tucker Kraft, Eagles tight end. Go watch his South Dakota State highlights.
They're solid, but
you have not watched them.
I have not watched
Tucker Kraft.
You will
need to send them, yeah. But
Tavon Austin
is 1-1.
Is 1-1, and there is not even relatively a close
sneaky 1-2. Sneaky Ryan Switzer had some.
Not when you're playing in a fake conference, no.
Sure. And the Big 12 is not a fake conference?
Who did you say?
Ryan Switzer from North Carolina. The white boy wide receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah. He played in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And Tavon Austin played in the Big 12. Or the Big East, maybe, at the time.
I thought you were saying that North Carolina was in the Big 12. Okay.
No.
I see where...
Ask me that question in like 10 years, and you'll probably get a different answer, but...
Sure, but no. For those that have not watched it, please, for the love of On the Line...
We have breaking news. Jahni Broome has been traded to the LA Clippers for cash considerations. So Bron and Broome is no more.
Man.
I had to break that a second I saw it.
Who would have thought in the good year... of our Lord, 2026, Tavon Austin and Jahni Broome would be used
in the same sentence.
But here we are. I don't know if the show could get any better than this right here.
No.
I mean, that's...
I wonder what the percent chance is as we now talk about the probability percentages for Auburn football.
Ah, very nice.
You didn't pick up what I was putting down right there. I'm sorry.
I did not. But final thoughts. For those that have not watched it,
Go watch it.
15 minutes of free time... Tavon Austin, West Virginia highlights. Absolutely incredible. It is video game mode. It is stupid. It is absolutely fantastic. Yes, with Helen back in the background. That was my walk. Funny enough, to show you how much that video was awesome and how much it meant, that was my... And I look at it now and it was so stupid. I hate... Here's a tangent that I was not planning to go on.
We've been tangenting it for the past hour. Go ahead.
Very much so. I understand in high school. I understand in college. I understand in the MLB. If you're a coach listening and you disagree or your team goes against this, I apologize. Do not give your kids walk-up songs.
Really? You don't like the Little League walk-up songs? I think those are kind of awesome.
Do not give your kids walk-up songs. I apologize. Maybe that's the old school get off my lawn, but... Don't give your kids walk-up songs. That being said, we were only allowed walk-up songs for 1 week of the year, and it was when we were in Cooperstown.
Sure.
And my walk-up song was Helen Back because of the Tavon Austin highlight clip. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, are you putting it on? Oh, gosh.
I'm just putting it on.
I'm going to sit here in silence while I look up at the TV. Go ahead and take a break. We're going to play a 15-minute commercial break while we watch Tavon Austin.
Advertisers are going to love us.
They are. If you ever want to get in, you just let us. Again, when you have spots on the line, you let us know when you want us to take breaks, and you just start sending us like YouTube clips or whatever the case may be, like full Auburn game highlights, and I will watch every single second of it. No, okay.
Probability.
Now we're back to...
The rundown.
Oh, it's such a good video. It's so good. Oh, gosh.
Okay. We are doing great radio right now.
I cannot look at this.
Yeah.
Auburn football's win probability, according to ESPN. Thank you. I will not be able to focus. Again, you can do with this what you will. Obviously, you play the games. But whenever you go and you look on ESPN, they have the little, not a pie chart, but essentially the circle that shows the percentages that you have to win. And wanted to dive through those 12 games for the Auburn Tigers. Looking at Auburn and Baylor, Auburn has a 68% chance to win that football game.
Do you want to do an exercise with this? Higher? Do you think that should, in your mind, is that higher or lower than what it, like, is you the number in your mind, if you had to give it a number?
I think that is perfect.
You think that's perfect? 68%? I think it should be
higher.
I'm
not going 1% lower. I'm not going 1% higher. But I think two-thirds of the time, I think Auburn should. I should be more, but I see the world where DJ Lagway and you tip your cap. But I like right around, 65-70% for Auburn to win this game.
I think I could go like low 70s.
Sure. I mean, if you're going to go 4% higher, I mean.
Like, 72, 74, like something like that. Sure. Maybe closer to 75 than 65.
Sure. Southern Miss, 91%. I guess I could go higher. But
I could go higher.
The fact that it's only 9 out of 10 times Auburn should win this game.
Concerning. But
again, I know that's not directly how those statistics work. But, win probability, 68% against Baylor, 91% against Southern Miss. We'll get to what happens in the giant record as a whole if you take care of business here in a moment. Florida, a 52% chance of winning this football game. I guess I could see it being higher since it's at home. I don't give those 2 points of or 2 percentage points like the field goal that you usually get at home of being a spread favorite. I'd probably go a little bit more. That being said,
I think that's
you feel like this is the toss-up game. This is the coin flip, heads or tails for the Auburn Tigers and the Florida Gators. Really early on, week three, inside Jordan-Hare at night, 52% for the Auburn Tigers to beat the Florida Gators. Against Vanderbilt at home, 65%.
Sure. I think that Auburn is more likely to beat Baylor than Vanderbilt, but I think I'm still too confident for both those. That Auburn will win both those games, so I think that's fine.
Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with that. October 3rd, you work your way into the month of October at Tennessee.
That
where
should be higher.
This has become a game that Auburn fans have gone, okay, quarterback questions, not a night game at Neyland Stadium. What is Josh Heupel going to do? 35% chance for the Tigers to beat the Volunteers in Neyland Stadium. You say it should be higher.
I think it should be like 40-45. I think that Auburn can win that game 100%.
You get the bye week in between Tennessee and Georgia. At Georgia, 16%.
Honestly, lower.
I mean,
I think
not even just because of talent and team, just because it's a place that you just don't have success in. I'd love to see it change.
There's not a team not named Alabama that can win more than 10% of the time in Athens, and put to be point blank.
Yeah. You continue on through the month of October against LSU at home, the 11 a.m. kick, 33%.
I think, yeah, one out of every three times Auburn wins that game. I think that that's fine.
You say 33%, and it's like, man, I feel like that should be higher. But then, yeah, you get to the point of, yeah, every third time in a simulation or whatever, Auburn wins. Like, yeah.
Because I don't want to say, like, sense. Yeah, every, you know, two out of every 10 times or one out of every five times, because 20% seems kind of low, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, 33, one out of every three times, Auburn wins. Funny enough, they have a better chance. I guess it's not funny enough because it's at home versus on the road. But October 31st, the Halloween game, early kick at Ole Miss, 32% chance to win. A lot of people, that is a game that Auburn fans and kind of the calendar, or the media rather, when looking at the calendar has gone, okay, this might be one that we circle to pay a little bit more attention to as well.
I think that if you were to flip the sites of these two games of LSU and Ole Miss, I think LSU would drop dramatically to like 20%, if not 15, closer to Georgia. I think Ole Miss would shoot up closer to 50 and be like 45.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on the road is just so tough. Even though I don't think Vaught Hemingway's at a particularly imposing pace to play.
Especially not at 11 a.m.
Right. But when, the Ole Miss Lane Kiffin kickoff special of 11 a.m. But I think that it's going to be far enough in the season where Pete Golding's going to figure out kind of how to do this head coaching thing when it's not game by game and having expectations over a full season, how the play calling is going to work out. Ole Miss is going to have that figured out. So they're going to be a lot stronger by the end of the year. I think that they'll be fine.
Just because it's 11 a.m., I predict that game being a shootout that Auburn would have to win.
That's the game.
Because of Kawan Lacy, yeah. Where it's usually, okay, we're not going to allow the home run ball over the top, but we'll give up six yards of carry, and we'll give up the little hitch screens and the little, you know, the 5 yard, 8 yard curls, but we're not going to allow over the top. Kind of the DJ Durkin, Ben Don't Break special. So I feel like that would be the game that Auburn has to go and win a shootout. You then return home for Arkansas. You have a 78% chance of winning that contest.
I think it should be maybe a tiny bit lower because in my mind, for some reason, just because of how weird this series has been with Auburn winning in Fayetteville and Arkansas winning in Auburn, I don't know if I think it'd be a lot closer to Vanderbilt at 65-70.
Six road teams have won that game?
Yes, and the one that wasn't, I believe, was the spike fumble.
The spike, yeah.
It's a spike. John Neighbors disagree with
spike.
You. Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, but it's very interesting that that number is so high. You know, it's the highest non-Group of Five game that Auburn plays. It's the highest SEC game.
Yeah, and the second highest right after that, Mississippi State on the road in Stark, Vegas. Again, a 68% chance for Auburn to win this football game.
Another game I'd love to see the projections and the percent probability closer to, because I think it'd be that first number would start with a 5. It'd be like 58-59%, but Auburn should win, but like there's a path.
Yeah, again, those days on the 7th, the 14th, and 21st of November, if Auburn wants to have a successful season when everything is said and done, those three games have to be wins. Arkansas at State, and then Samford, Auburn has a 99% chance of winning. I can't really argue
No.
that. And, I mean, I could probably make the argument of lower because there's 99 or 98 numbers that are lower than that. So, again, those three have to be wins. And then Alabama in Tuscaloosa to finish out the regular season, a 22% chance for the Tigers to win that one to close out the 2026 regular season.
Is it crazy if I say that that should be maybe a little bit higher?
I don't disagree.
I think that if you told me, hey, you have a 30% chance to beat Alabama, I think I'd believe you.
Yeah.
Because I think that Alabama, they're a good team. It's hard to play in Bryant-Denny Stadium. Yes, this is all true. But it's the Iron Bowl. You can't tell me that 20% of the time, one out of every five, is only when Auburn wins, because you got to throw out the record books. You got to throw out the probability. You got to throw out all these advanced statistics, and really just boils down to who hates who more. And Auburn is kind of due for a win, just point blank in this rivalry. And I just don't think that the difference maker of being in Bryant-Denny Stadium is enough to make it, you know, lower than LSU by a ton, lower than Ole Miss by 10 points. It's their second hardest game on the schedule, sure. But if you told me, yeah, that's closer to 28-30%, mm-hmm. I think that's the fair number.
So again, projected to beat Baylor, Southern Miss, Florida, Vanderbilt.
Do you start 4-0?
Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Samford.
7-5.
If Auburn takes care of business the way that the ESPN win probability models look like, Auburn gets 7 wins. And in the most Auburn fashion, Auburn would start 4-0, they'd lose 4 in a row, they'd win 3 in a row, and then lose the Iron Bowl. You talk about a roller coaster of a season. You'd love life. You'd be all over social media. All of a sudden, again, that month of October that we talked about, you have to avoid the punch in the mouth, the punch in the mouth, the punch in the mouth, and then the right hook. If you can survive one of those weeks, get off the mat. Arkansas, Mississippi State, Samford. Put you in a spot to where, again.
Especially given that, if you're going to Alabama, if you win 3 in a row before that, you're going to. And if you steal one before that, you know what it takes to play a good team.
If you sit there and you say, okay, you've won 4 of your last 5 after starting 4-0, going into Tuscaloosa, going into the Iron Bowl.
With a chance to get to 9-3. There, people will be saying that Auburn could win that game and could be projecting them.
Don't fire me up here on a Tuesday afternoon on July 28th. Don't do it. You fired me up enough with Tavon Austin highlights and talking about some of the clutchest moments that are underappreciated in Auburn football history. Can't do that here. Can't sit there and say 9 wins. You could, and I mean, I'd happily listen. I just might not put my name to it quite yet. We'll take our final break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, we're back wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Man, we appreciate everybody for being a part of today's conversation, whether you just tuned in, whether you listened from time to time, or whether you, again, called in on the phone lines, texted into the text box. A very, very fun show that, again, sometimes that's the way that it needs to go. It's a show that you don't necessarily plan on it going a certain way, yet it just works its way, and again, it feels like people are so easily able to resonate with so many different moments. Unlike you, who your highlight of Auburn football is a Peyton Thorne run against Georgia.
I mean, unless you want to call a dropped pass in the end zone in fourth overtime on weird throwback play. I mean, if you want to count that, we can. You know, you could also count anytime Cam Coleman would moss someone, but now that just makes me sad because he's not here anymore. Then there's, again, Peyton Thorne's run against Georgia we talked about on the up the sideline. But yeah, again, hopefully Byron Brown will give us something to talk about against Baylor. Kind of what Auburn has always had, that one play against, like when Seth Williams went up and the Bo Nix play to beat Oregon. Auburn just, in these weird preseason openers, Auburn always does something.
There always is.
There's
one
always
of those
something.
Moments. Again, we talked about that. The Seth Williams, they can choose some clock, but they're not going to. or play it safe, but they're not going to. They also, again, that Sal Canella catch that we talked about in the back of the end zone against Washington.
Yes.
When did we talk? That was with in Tampa talking about with Mr. Epps of the Peach Bowl. Yeah, it feels like there's always one of those moments.
Was there one against Louisville? I think there was.
There was a fumble that was returned all the way to the three, and we settled for a field goal.
Mm.
And I want to say we missed it. I could be wrong about that.
But Auburn always does that, so maybe statistics numbers are telling me there's going to be a chance this year.
There's a chance. What we know is there will be more highlights to come, and we will happily be able to talk about them. We appreciate everybody for being here with us again and for being a part of today's program. Couldn't do it without you. Couldn't have as much fun as we do in the studio without y'all for being here, listening in, texting in, calling in. A whole lot of fun was had here this afternoon. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Sports are so much better with an opinion. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.